I was getting ready to just start, and I thought that we had been rolling this whole time, but we weren't. Had I not caught that, I wonder how long we would have got before, like, that...
We recorded the last episode, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That nightmare scenario of, like, you didn't press record, did you? And it's like, ugh. Fortunately, that's never happened before. What's up? This is Movies on Up. Takes one to know one, and I happen to know one of the best podcast co-hosts around, and he is seated right across from me, and that is, of course, Mr. Dave Bisella.
Nice save, because I thought you were calling me a schmuck for a second.
I was not. I would never do that. That is Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. It takes one to know one is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that is, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guests on our Facebook page, which lives at facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you can tweet your guest to us on the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we choose you, you won't be a schmuck, because we will send you a prize package full of all sorts of great Movies on Up goodies. We invite you to play along as we invite you to check out this week's episode, which is based on Karen Kusama's The Invitation from 2016, stars Logan Marshall Green, a man better known in this podcast as fake-ass Tom Hardy. So we thought we would do a fake-ass Tom Hardy movie, and he's got quite a few to pick from, but one that we both like an awful lot is The Invitation. It's one of those ones you'll see on Netflix, and you may be like, oh, that looks cool, maybe I should check it out, but you just never do.
Do. I said this at the end of last week's episode. If you have not watched The Invitation on Netflix, it's on Netflix. If you have not watched it, stop and come back to this episode after, because the less you know about it going in, the better. Don't listen to this and think like, oh, is this something I want to watch? Just trust us. It's a great experience. I'm not a big, like, spoilers. Like, I can live with spoilers. Like, I can have something spoiled and still enjoy it. But something like this, I don't want to be the one to spoil it for you. So if you have not seen The Invitation, watch it and then come back and listen.
Hey, it's welcome awesome. Back. Glad you made it.
Was I right? Isn't it good?
Clearly, because they came back. Even though it's not really fair to do with this movie, we talked about Netflix because it was a limited release. It was released on 10 screens. So most of the ways people find this is going to be on streaming services. And since Netflix sends us a big fat check every week, we like to mention them. It did open to $67,000 its opening weekend, which was good for 40th place. But its per screen average of $6,788 was $10 higher than the number one movie that week, which was Melissa McCarthy's The Boss, Batman v Superman, Zootopia, My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, and Hardcore Henry round out the top five of that week. In its 12-week run, The Invitation managed $231,737 domestically, which puts it in 9,608th place all time, one spot above a movie about racing small wooden cars featuring Pat Morita called Down in Derby. I am not going to expect you to know either of these, so I'll just mention them. And one spot below a movie directed by and starring John Mellencamp.
Oh, I forget the name of it. I know what movie you're talking about, but I forget the name.
It's called Falling from Grace.
Yeah, it was filmed in Indiana. I grew up in Indiana, so this was like a big deal.
Yeah, apparently so did John Mellencamp, didn't
he? He did.
Yeah, I think I've heard that in a song or two. Realistically, the only movies that I can give you for context that fall anywhere near this are Tucker and Dale versus Evil, a movie that we've talked about
like that
often. That is in 9,659th place all time. And this year's Borg versus McEnroe, starring LaBeouf, clocked in with $217,000 to this point for 9,696th place all time. As Dave mentioned, there's a lot going on in this movie. There's a lot to unpack with it. But first, I think we'd like to start with the premise. Dave said multiple times that one of his favorite premises for a movie is as simple as a couple get invited to a dinner party and go from there. I would say that The Invitation checks that box.
I love something so simple to where just people at a dinner party. If you can make me interested in that, way into it, because anything can happen, and if it's that simple of a setup and you can make a good movie out of it, fantastic. Like, there's a couple that just come to mind, but this is one of my favorites. You know, I mean, there's a lot more to it, but fake Tom Hardy and his girlfriend get invited to a dinner party. That's the setup. There's a lot more to it that we'll get into, but that's the setup, and it leads to a fantastic, amazing, awesome movie.
Well, I agree. It is a great movie. It's not a premise that I necessarily enjoy. I mean, I like them. I don't seek out dinner party movies, I guess. But when I do tend to watch them, I like them. But I would like to, for old time's sake, humbly submit a bonus of movies that take place at a dinner party. Not that have a dinner party scene, but they take place at a dinner party. And my first one is from 1985. If you're our age, it might be the first one that comes to mind. And it's Clue, featuring Tim Curry. A lot of fun. It's probably the best adaptation of a board game I think I have ever seen in my life.
Definitely,
which is
top five.
Yeah, certainly. If we ever do that list, Clue probably makes it. Number four, a movie I like an awful lot. It's a really, really dark comedy directed by Todd Berger. It's A Disaster from 2012. David Cross is really good in that movie. Julia Stiles. It's a dinner party at the end of the world, and you're just kind of stuck with these people until you die. Number three is Adam Wingert's You're Next. That, a little bit like The Invitation, it starts at
it's
a dinner party.
Family, though? Like,
yeah.
It's a family thing?
Right. Not so much friends, but it's family. But it definitely goes off the rails.
That's one of those that comes to mind.
Very quickly. Yeah, that's one that I think shares a lot of DNA with The Invitation. My number two is a movie that does have supper in the title. It's The Last Supper from 1995. Bill Paxton's great in this movie. He's a neo-Nazi that gets invited to a dinner party. It doesn't turn out very well for him. And then this group of younger folks, I believe it's a really young Cameron Diaz, Annabeth Gish is in there. Some younger folks decide that they're going to start having these dinner parties where they kill really terrible people going forward. And that's kind of fun. And then my number one should be no surprise, because when we did our anniversary list and Dave mentioned how I'll stick a Hitchcock movie on any list, that's not excluding bonus lists. So my number one movie about a dinner party is Rope. There is a murder that gets committed right at the beginning of the movie. And then the murderers decide, hey, wouldn't it be really fun to just stash this body in this trunk and invite everybody we know over to basically just parade and eat hors d'oeuvres off this box that has a dead guy in it. So that's my bonus list.
My bonus, I have one, and it'll come up a lot in this episode because there's a lot about both of them that I like. It's from 2013, written and directed by James Ward Burkett. It's Coherence. It's another one. I think it's on Amazon Prime. I don't think it's on Netflix, but it's, these two are from within a couple of years of each other, are two of my favorite just dinner party movies, because you don't know where either of them are going. But I mean, we'll get into that as we go into The Invitation.
Yeah, and it's with Kusama directing. On the one hand, it's kind of hard to know, based on her work, where this movie might go. She has a pretty good character piece, Girl Fight, which I think you've mentioned a couple times.
Girl Fight's really, really good. Kusama's a very interesting director, because she broke out with Girl Fight, which is this really good character-driven movie, and then kind of got sucked into the studio system. Oh, you made a movie about girls fighting, even though it was about more than that. Hey, why don't you do Aeon Flux? Oh, let's do Jennifer's Body. She kind of got thrown into this like girl power director, which
very much so.
But then she comes back, and this is the first one since Girl Fight that feels like a Karen Kusama movie.
I think a lot of that girl power is of her own choosing. And she did that segment in Double X, which is an anthology movie directed by women and featuring women in the leads.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying she's like anti-girl power. But
yeah, certainly. I don't think she is. Trying to think of her and, you know, what she does, what she's good at. I mean, it's hard when maybe the two biggest movies that she's done is Aeon Flux. That's a visual movie where the director is not necessarily the star. And Jennifer's Body, even before you think of the actors, I think you think of Diablo Cody. Mm-hmm. That is a Diablo Cody movie. So, you know, outside of movies that are led by a lady, it's hard to see a connection in there.
Her TV career, I think she's done Halt and Catch Fire episodes, Billions, Man in High Castle, and Masters of Sex, which are all really quality, character-driven shows that she's done multiple episodes of.
If I'm struggling for a strand to connect her movies, I would guess if we don't go with the female-led stuff, it may be a bit on the horror side, although I don't know that I would call The Invitation a horror movie. I think it's a slow burn, old-fashioned suspense movie.
Suspense, thriller, it feels like a horror movie. It's hard to classify. It is. It's got horror elements.
Sure.
It's got thriller elements. It's got suspense elements.
Mystery.
Yeah. It's got a lot of stuff pulled from a lot of different stuff. And tonally, though, I feel like it feels like a horror movie.
I would agree. I mean, I think it does feel very much like Your Next. That one is more obvious in its horror elements. It embraces that more fully, more quickly. But I mentioned Rope in the bonus list. In that movie, we know there's a murder committed early on, and we wait in suspense to see if these guys are going to get found out. But in this movie, it's not as obvious. We think something fishy is going on, but you can never really seem to get that smoking gun, which I think a horror movie, you would see a death early, so you would know. This, it's more
this is a guessy
conjecture.
One. Like this.
Yeah.
The premise is outside of fake Tom Hardy and his girlfriend are invited to a dinner party. It's a dinner party at his ex-wife and her new husband's house, which used to be his house.
Already awkward.
With his wife, where they lost a child. So, I mean, there's a lot of
more
layers.
More awkwardness.
There's a lot of layers there. And not to mention her new husband, she met at a grief support group while they were still married. So there's a lot going on here. Then you add in that they invite all these other people that were friends of them back then that they've all kind of grown apart and haven't seen each other in a couple of years. So there's that grown-up element to where, like, there's people that I would still consider great friends, but I probably haven't been in a room with them in 2 years. And you get together, and there is that familiarity, but there's also that stranger feel to it.
It's
to
an
where
awkwardness. Like, why have
people,
we all been gathered here?
There's that sense of, like, why are we here, or why haven't we done this more often? Because you can tell these people care about each other, and they still know each other, and they're familiar with each other. They just haven't seen each other in a couple years. And it builds from there, and, you know, you have Michael Wiesem from Orphan Black, who I love. He's also new sexy Jason Mewes on Game of Thrones, which is way better than sexy Jason Mewes, but it's almost like a recruitment dinner, and it builds up, and it's like, oh, that makes sense. They both went through this tragedy, and they're happy, and now they just want to share this newfound relief and happiness with their friend. It almost like inviting your friends over to sell vacuum cleaners with you, and that's what it feels like.
But you don't tell your friends you're inviting them over to join the fast-paced world of vacuum sales. So, you know, as we're trying to figure out what the connection is between Karen Kusama's movies, you know, we're also trying to figure out how these characters are all kind of connected. And some of them are easier to tell than others. We see Fat H at the beginning, so we know who his girlfriend is. And then, oh, okay, well, he was married to her. And we see through some flashbacks that they lost a child. But then, okay, that's fine. But what does the rest of the crew have in common?
And I love how it's barely touched on. Like, it's just, when you see people that are friends, you don't have to know the whole backstory on why they're friends. Like, I like the little throwaway where Ben is like, hey, I'm Ben. I don't know if you remember me. We used to run a thriving business for 3 months together. You know that they had this close relationship, and that's all you need. And Miguel, and I forget his boyfriend's name, but, like, you get that they know them. I don't know where they know them from or why, but I know they know them, and they know them as a couple. Hey, Karen, where's Choi? Oh, he's late as always. They haven't seen him in 2 years, but Choi's still this guy that's always late.
It's not necessarily,
it doesn't waste unnecessary time building up these relationships.
No, it's not germane for the characters to figure out why they've all been invited there. I mean, they're curious. Like,
oh, yeah. In a way, they wonder why they've been there.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's good to see these people.
Sure. But as a viewer, it's never a coincidence. So we are more maybe suspicious as to why all these people are in a room together. And I think that Logan Marshall Green does a fantastic job. He is kind of us in the movie. He becomes suspicious as to why this group's being gathered and what the true motives are. And he seems to be just crazy enough for the viewer to kind of see where he's coming from, but you could also see where he's just being crazy.
Because he's a dude that's in his ex-wife's house that he used to share with her, where they lost a son. That's a tough situation. Like, he's going...
This new guy's living in his house, fucking his wife and watching his TV.
He's going back to that house where he had a family, and now that family doesn't exist anymore, and his wife is now with a new guy in their house. So, yeah, it's a tough situation. She does a good job of, like, not relying on that too much, but... It's an easy excuse, and that's why you have so... I like the characters, like, you're brave just to be here tonight. And trying to justify, like, yeah, you're...
His behavior.
You're acting crazy, but I get it. And so he's kind of on this longer leash to where they know it's going to be tough on him. So they're giving him that leeway to kind of be crazy. As viewers, we're like, you know, okay, that is a tough situation. Maybe he is. Okay, I get it.
The rest of the group, they don't see what we see. And you know, we can kind of understand where he's coming from, but we can also say, like, all right, well, you know, maybe it is just grief.
And since he's the only one seeing it, is he seeing it?
Right.
Or is he seeing it?
Yeah, like the flashbacks. But I think if you're a finely attuned viewer and you think that there may be some sinister shenanigans going down, Eden and David might be up to no good. When we see their friend, John Carroll Lynch, show up, pretty much just clinches it. This man has got the face of a murderer. He's a wonderful character actor. He's able to do that dread. He was in that Channel Zero on the Sci-Fi Channel. They take the creepypastas. Mm-hmm. He was fantastic in No End House. I love watching him do anything, and he was really well used in this movie.
I love him as an actor. He's one of my favorite working actors now, but he doesn't get the love that he should. I feel like he's what Stephen Tobolowsky gets credit for, where he's just this... Stephen Tobolowsky is a great character.
Yeah.
But John Carroll Lynch...
I think he's closer to Philip Seymour Hoffman. He doesn't get the roles.
Yes. Yeah. No. I could see that. That's a good... Because, I mean, he shows up and he's intense. He was in one episode of The Walking Dead where it was just a standalone episode that was basically just about him. He was a character that was just, here's one episode of this off character. And you know what? That show's terrible. That episode was really, really good because of him. He's so good and he's so intense.
He would have made a good Christian Grey. He could have elevated that.
And he's interesting because he is this bigger guy that could be imposing if he wanted to be. But he's got this aura about him to where, like, he could just be the friendly neighbor who's just bigger.
He's probably a murderer.
Yeah, where he's got this thing where it's like, he might be a murderer, but he looks like he makes really good dinners. So, I will eat at your house. So, like, because if he's not a murderer, I'm probably missing out on great meals and great conversation. So he's got that sense to where I could see him going both ways. He can play the nicest guy in the world or a serial killer.
And this movie is full of points where it can go either way. I mean, I don't want to call them fake outs, but it does seem that the movie is setting you up to realize that there's something not quite right going on at this dinner party. And I think the biggest example of that, you already mentioned Choi, is when finally Fat H has had enough and he calls out his ex-wife and David for doing something terrible to Choi. He gets the voicemail. He's like, wait a minute. He should be here. Why is he not here? And you're like, yeah, finally, there's tangible evidence.
There's the smoking gun.
And then the smoking gun walks in the door. He's like, hey, guys.
Yeah, hey, sorry, I got called to work. And that's such a good scene. And this is where fake Tom Hardy is so good in this movie because he does such good acting with his face. And I think you see a lot of that in the Upgrade trailer to where he doesn't get to have fun a lot in a lot of his movies. Like, he's not usually this fun. Upgrade looks like he's having fun. And it looks like he's doing a lot with it. There's a scene in the trailer where he's punching a dude where the computer is basically punching a dude and his face, he's so surprised what's going on and he's kind of appalled that this dude's getting beat up. And his facial acting is so good. And it's so good in this because just that look on his face when Choi walks in.
He's disappointed.
There's a lot going on because maybe I am crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe tonight is too much for me. And maybe
one of my friends isn't dead.
Yeah.
Happy about it, man.
So there's a lot of that. And then just a couple minutes later, you get another facial reaction from him, which is just, we'll get to it when that comes, but that's, it's such a great shot. It's perfect. It's so amazingly acted by him, and it's perfectly framed by her. It's just a couple minutes away in the movie, but we'll get to whatever else you have to talk about before that.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where we're headed. You know, we talked about you don't want to know anything about this movie. You just want to know that Dave really liked it, and I like it too. People get invited to a dinner party and just go. Because this whole time you're thinking, all right, there's something not right here. After we watch the video, then we kind of see that, all right, maybe there's something weird, but it's much worse than that.
Okay, in the video, I want to mention that as well. We talk about John Carroll Lynch. Toby Huss. Phenomenal character actor as well. Like, he's another one of those that just shows up and stuff and just destroys it. He's good in everything he's in. Toby Huss is another one of my favorite actors. This cast is great. But yeah, you see the video and it's like, oh, that's weird. But then you get it, like, okay, Sexy Cow lost a wife, Eden lost a son. They're learning to cope with that grief, and this is how. So, okay. They're trying to bring friends into this because it's, you know, you want to feel like a family.
It's awkward. Maybe this isn't for us.
Maybe they don't see it as a cult. It's a cult. You see that? So that the video is creepy. John Carroll Lynch, he tells a story about killing his wife. It's creepy. And then they're just making out now. Like, it's a weird dinner party and everybody else is trying to go along with the flow. And yes, they know it's awkward, but let's make the best of it. Except fake Tom Hardy, who feels there's something wrong. And we haven't mentioned Emma Yahtzee Coronaldi, who plays Kira in this, his girlfriend. She's great in this as well because she's not in that group. These aren't people that she knows. She's been in his life after that 2 years.
Knowing there's a history with Eden. And
they know about her. Like, there's enough contact that they know he has this girlfriend, Kira, and they're warm to her because she is with a friend of theirs, and it's everyone. I'm like, oh, you must be Kira. Real friendly. So, like, but she's this outsider who happens to be with this loony bin who's ruining the night. So she's got to try to calm him down, but not alienate herself too much from him because he's all she has there. And she's really, really good in this movie. It's so well acted and so well paced because it doesn't waste time with unnecessary stuff. It doesn't give everybody a backstory. It doesn't give every relationship a backstory, but it gives you enough that you know that it's there. So I'm a big deaths that matter guy. Like, I will take less deaths in a horror movie when they matter than a high body count. And that's what you get here, is that everybody matters. Like, you can tell that, okay, yeah, Troy just showed up, but if he's dead, that's a big impact to this whole group, you know, especially Karen. Like, that's a big impact. If Miguel's boyfriend dies, that affects everybody. So you have these characters that you understand the importance, you understand the relevance. So if anything happens to any of them, you know the waves that makes on all of their lives. And it does a good job of building that up without overdoing it, which would slow the pace down because it is a slow burn already. But it's a well-paced slow burn. It's a slow burn in that not a ton happens until it happens, but there's enough to keep you going. So it's not boring.
For me, it's a little bit, you know, we're getting some red herrings, kind of. So it's like being on a roller coaster. You're waiting for that big hill. You think you're coming to it. Up, 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 up. Oh, this wasn't it. So, you know, 10 minutes later, up, 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 up. Oh, this wasn't it. And then when
it comes, you just keep going.
Yes. When we do
falling,
head down the
going
hill
and going and going,
and this movie does go where we hoped, we thought, we feared that it was going to go, and the bodies do start to pile up, the poisoning, then the guns come out and the fire pokers.
When it turns, and I mean, we're talking 20 minutes left in the movie, mm-hmm. like it builds up to this. And then the last 20 minutes is when everything happens. But it's beautiful filmmaking because you just had him freak out about Choi, okay? And that Choi walks in the door.
Yep.
So they do this wine, and here's this guy that should have his tail between his leg, should just be quiet for the rest of the night. All of a sudden, there's wine. Karen takes a sip. He throws his glass. He starts knocking it. Don't drink the wine. Don't drink the wine. You know, and then Sadie, oh, you ruined it. You ruined it. And he pushes her very much like John Carroll Lynch killed his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar, almost exactly. And then she's there and they're working on her because you're thinking like, oh, did this loony bin just kill somebody at
right.
the dinner party?
This is the hill. Oh, my God. Just, it's him the whole time.
She's not breathing. Yes, she is. No, not her. Karen, the one who drank the wine. And you go to her and she's foaming at the mouth. That's the shot of his face when he sees her. And it's like, holy shit, I'm right. But then, holy
and
shit,
what does that mean?
I'm right.
Yeah.
It's not this like, oh, I told you so face. It's a, oh, God.
Like, Dave, we're playing to kill us this whole time. Yeah.
And it builds from that because that's so intense. And then you hear the gunshot. He's doing CPR on her, trying to get Karen back. And then you hear the gunshot, and it's like, it goes to the slow motion, and you have Kira with blood from the gunshot, like, backing up. And that's when the poisoning maybe could have been coincidence, and maybe it hadn't hit everybody. But once that gun comes out, now everybody knows what's going on. And that sequence is so wonderfully done and so beautifully set up that it's one of the most, I think, appealing payoffs that I've seen in a long time, because it does take you some time to get there, and you start to doubt that you're gonna get there, but then you get there and it's executed flawlessly.
And if it's not, I mean, that's the movie. If
that,
you
that
wait
turn is the,
you know, an hour and 10 minutes to get there and it doesn't work, then you're pissed because you've wasted your whole time. If this roller coaster never pays off with that hill, then it's just a cock tease. But this movie does a wonderful job of, when it's time to pay off everyone's patience, it's worth it.
Yeah, and then it just escalates. There is the girl power moment where Kira is the one. Mm-hmm. You have John Carroll Lynch as Pruitt, who is this...
The biggest physically
imposing guy who is the monster of this movie. She beats him to death with a fire extinguisher. I love that. And one of my favorite... It's such a beautiful scene, and it's beautiful is a weird word, but it's so wonderfully written and directed and acted by fake Tom Hardy and Kira when they're outside and he just looks at her. And you don't get this in a lot of horror movies, but it's such a perfect scene where he says, from here on out, we do what it takes to get out of here. And then one of the best lines that I've heard is, they are only people, which I thought is brilliant because... they're not fighting monsters. It's not Jason. It's not Freddy Krueger. They're only people, I think, is such a fantastic line for this kind of movie, because it is one of those, if it bleeds, we can kill it moments.
Yep.
It's that moment, and that's why, you know, she hits him with the fire extinguisher. He's vulnerable. He's only a person, so keep hitting him. And it's fascinating, and that line is so perfectly done. And I mean, the last 30 minutes of this movie, I just think it's like a masterclass in filmmaking between acting and writing and directing. I think it comes together because we aren't even at the end yet. And that, I think, is one of the greatest movie endings I've ever seen. Like, I love the last 30 minutes of this movie. And that follows really liking the first 60 of it. So it's a wonderful job by Kusama, and I want to see her do anything. This is one of those movies where, like, I will watch anything she does from here on out just because of how wonderful this movie is.
We have talked a lot about Karen Kusama and given her a lot of credit for crafting this movie, and she did a great job, but she can't do it alone had it not been for a good story. And I do think this was a very cleverly written, cleverly thought out and planned out story from the writers Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi. So around here, if we like this movie this much, then maybe it's worth watching Karen Kusama movies. Maybe it's worth watching Fat H movies moving forward. But, you know, I think you have to give a lot of deference to the writers as well.
Yeah, and especially it's out of their wheelhouse because these are guys that are in the studio system. You know, they broke out with Crazy Beautiful, which was a Kirsten Dunst movie. At the time, Kirsten Dunst was a movie star. They went on to Aeon Flux, which is the Karen Kusama's introduction into the studio system. And then they kind of got stuck with Clash of the Titans, RIPD, Ride Along 2. They're doing Ride Along 3. But they're also doing the Boys pilot for, I believe it's Amazon, which I'm excited about. And then this is kind of the sore thumb. This is them not really doing a big studio movie and maybe giving them the freedom to do a little bit more, that they're not adapting something. They're just kind of given the freedom to get creative, and it worked. And the combination of them with the director they worked with Aeon Flux, worked.
Them with the director that they worked with is going to be a combination we see later this year with The Destroyer. That's Sebastian Stan, Nicole Kidman, Toby Kebbell, Scoot McNairy, your boy Toby Huss shows up in it as well. So, you know, that might be one that I don't imagine that it's going to be a thriller in the way The Invitation was. But,
oh man, that cast. Tatiana Maslany, Toby Kebbell, like, man.
When I see something that's really original and goes in some places I don't expect, if those principals are going to get back together, I'm certainly more interested in watching that movie than I would be normally. I mean, if you said, I mean, I like Sebastian Stan, but you know, him and Nicole Kidman, to be honest, aren't necessarily moving the needle for me. The rest of the cast is really good. But if it's, all right, those two in a movie from the writers of The Invitation and the director of that, then you've got something there.
But I mean, it sounds awesome too. And a former undercover agent goes back to people that they met in their undercover life. Like, yeah, that screams character driven. That seems like awkward setup that could lead almost anywhere. So, okay, yeah, let them keep writing. You know, if they have to write 10 ride-alongs to write stuff like this, keep doing that. Again, she's one of those that I'll watch anything she does now. And with that cast and these writers, like, I am excited for that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I guess we could have done, if we really got into it, this would have been a great episode to do for that week, to really kind of pump up that movie. Hey, if you like this, then here's
Ride Along.
Right, here's these three back together again. We'd do Aeon Flux, it's fine. I think we've given a lot of credit to Logan Marshall Green in this movie for his ability to keep you guessing. As much as the writer and the directors are the star of it, he does a fantastic job as well. So, you know, maybe then it's worth actually using his name moving forward.
Yeah, and you can't single him out. Like,
right,
everybody is good in this movie. Generally, you can find a weak link in a cast. And like here, you can't. Okay, Miguel and his boyfriend maybe aren't as developed as the others, but not for their performances. It's
sure,
just how it was written, because mm-hmm, they're, you know,
they're not the stars of the movie.
Yeah, you know, Ben showed up. He did what he was supposed to. Like, everybody in this movie did what they needed to do and did it very, very well. And I think that is a lot of Kasama. I mean, she got great performances out of this great cast. And you know, you have these actors that they're not flashy. John Carroll Lynch isn't a flashy dude. Toby Huss isn't. Even fake Tom Hardy. Like, he's very subdued. He's not this larger-than-life figure as, like, I think real Tom Hardy is at times. Even in his show on Cinemax, that Quarry, that's his show. He was the star of that show. But even then, he was pretty understated and never really larger-than-life, which fits perfectly in this movie. And I feel like if you put a bigger movie star or bigger movie stars in this movie, I feel like you lose a lot of that.
Because we don't know. Like, you know, if you see Tom Cruise, for instance, he's the hero of the movie. If you see Logan Marshall Green, you don't know who he is or
you
what
don't know
he
if
brings.
He's crazy.
Right.
And I mean, that's tease. Like, they touch him, like, with the beard. Like, oh, you're not as disheveled looking. It's clear that, you know, like, his life fell apart when he lost his son. And he hasn't gotten over it. He's not ready. Like, he's not doing well. Yeah, he's got Kira, and he's living life the best he can, but it still hurts. It still pains him. He doesn't have this cult that's taught him enlightenment. So you get that planet, that seed planted, and like, maybe he is crazy. Maybe it is too much. He goes to his kid's bedroom. He can't wash his hands without memories flooding back to him here. And like, I love this movie so much. I remember liking this movie. I rewatched it today. I don't remember liking it this much. Like, I love this movie. Because I think
once you get over the hills anticipating them, you can just enjoy the ride.
And
at that
I think
point,
that's what it was. Is like, I went in and I don't want to lose that experience of, it was a great experience watching it that first time, because you don't know. And that is one thing that I feel a lot of movies don't give you, that pure surprise. And maybe this one didn't, but you do start to doubt yourself and you don't know where it's going exactly. But it's so well done. And then that last shot.
The Red Lanterns.
Is that one of the coolest things? Like, okay, so they're at this dinner party and it turns out the people that invited them are part of a cult and they're trying to kill them all so that they can enter the other world or whatever. And there's been this Red Lantern on the back porch that it was seen earlier, but never really focused on. And then, you know, they escape, they live, they're on the back porch with that red light, and they happen to look over LA, and there's helicopters and sirens, and they happen to look over and just red lanterns everywhere. So this cult is bigger than that house. This event is taking place all over Los Angeles. I think that is such a fascinating ending. And it's one of those like The Purge. Like, yeah. I would watch The Invitation too, not following Kira and Tom Hardy,
same
but in
event,
another
different
dinner party with different people. Like, not that I want to see that because I feel like it's just repeated.
You lose all the surprises because you know what that red lantern means.
Okay, I'm into it. Like, I would watch it. It's so good, and it's such a beautifully
made
movie.
And it wasn't like
movie.
You were expecting it either. Like, oh, they're going to set this up for a franchise or anything like that. It was just like you guys escaped.
These people are crazy cult members, and then you get out. And it's like,
not so fast.
Yeah, I loved it. It's so wonderfully made. Her direction of it. It is very well written, but I feel like it's such a wonderfully made movie in every aspect, and especially that last 30 minutes. One of my favorite, especially rewatching it. And I want to watch it again. Like, I just watched it today. It's one of those, like, I want to watch it again and see how much more I pick up on, because you pick up on a lot that second time. And it's one of those where I'm sure if I watch it five more times, I'm picking up on something different each time. And I cannot recommend this movie enough. Hopefully if you've seen it, if you're this far into the episode and you haven't seen it, that's your loss. Thank you for listening, but you missed out on this one because it's not going to be the same to watch it now. But I love this movie.
Oh, from a movie that Dave loves to a actress that everyone loves.
America's Sweetheart.
America's Sweetheart, indeed. Ocean's 8 will be out next week, the Sandra Bullock-led heist movie. So we thought, again, rather than do a full cast, which there's a ton of ladies.
Kaling, Awkwafina, Rihanna, Kate Blanchett.
Yeah,
Sarah
that could
Paulson.
Be a lot of fun. But Sandra Bullock is someone that certainly does deserve her own list. So it'll be a lot of fun to go back and see what Sandy Bullock movies we really like. And
it's like, I can think of my number one right now. And like, nothing else jumps out to me, but I feel like
I don't know if it's my one. I'd have to. There are some that come to mind, but it'll be interesting to put them in an order.
It'll be interesting to be like, oh, yeah. Oh, I could think of a second one. So, like, it'll be fun to go back and look and be like, oh, yeah, I did like that. So.
Yeah. So we'd like to invite you back next week to find out what our...
No murder. We promise. Maybe murder by numbers, but no murder.
But to find out what all of our numbers are, come back next week. But until then...
Keep it up.